You got to go through it if you want to get past it. Only way to do it, moving and blast it.
Jamaican-born Everton Sylvester is a founding member of the Brooklyn Funk Essentials. He has been touring, writing, and recording with BFE for the past 25 years and half a dozen albums. Lead vocalist and or writer on many of Funk Essentials' most loved hits. His spoken word lyrics are set to deep Jamaican grooves. By searching for banjo, lending the feel of a roots reggae bash, Everton will be performing tracks from his just-released album Trial Separation, as well as some Brooklyn Funk Essential classics when he performs on Sunday night at 7 p.m. at Helsinki Hudson. It is a great pleasure to welcome Everton Sylvester to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning. You're welcome.
It's great to have you on the program. It's great to hear your voice, especially that voice.
Thanks.
So give us a sense of the new project of the Trial Separation, how this came about, and how you what you ultimately wanted to accomplish with it.
Well, you just played a Brooklyn Funk Essentials piece, so you know, Brooklyn Funk Essentials, for all its eclecticism, is essentially a funk band. We measure the success of our shows by how many people get up and dance. So sometimes it's hard to be a poet in a party band. So my Jamaican roots has always yearned to be backed by reggae music, since I'm classified a dub poet anyway. So I thought this would be a great opportunity, and here we are.
When you come to Helsinki Hudson, though, it'll be a little bit of everything, right? You'll be doing some tracks from the new album, and of course you'll be doing some classics from Brooklyn Funk Essentials.
That's true, and some older Searching for Banjo pieces, which are a bit more jazzy and a little less reggae.
Your background fascinates me, and I'm curious as to how all this came about. The idea to accompany your spoken word performance with music, how was that born, and was it a slow transition or something that came quite quickly?
Oh, it came pretty quickly. It came pretty quickly. But I was happily enjoying my work as a primarily slam poet, winning competitions and stuff, and then the Brooklyn Funk Essentials was born. So yeah, it came pretty quickly. But I have my beginnings with turning poems to music came. I was in first form, so I must have been perhaps 12. And Mrs. Grant, our literature teacher, assigned that we pick up a poem from A.F. Scott's Poems for Pleasure. I still have that book, and turn it to music. Well, it wasn't really, there were no instruments, but we turned it to song. And I picked Edward Lear's Owl and the Pussycat. I had the pleasure of setting to music on this last album. There was something really attractive to a 12-year-old boy to be able to get up and say, "Oh, lovely pussy, oh, pussy my love, what a beautiful pussy you are, you are, you are." And I'm still 12.
And this was a book, I was read that story. And I'm curious of what you think as a child. I'm curious as to what you think. Maybe not 12, but I understand your point. But I'm interested in what you think the music adds to the spoken word, of what you think it adds to the not only that particular piece, but just in general.
You know, I think music adds the same thing to spoken word as it does to song word. I don't think there is anyone with a great singing voice who opts to talk instead. It adds that flavor. It makes it easier for people to get up and dance, which is a beautiful thing. Having said that, though, there is something unmatchable, I think, about being up there with your voice as the only instrument, knowing that your audience is 100% appreciating.
And I'm guessing you learn a lot, and you your background in poetry and poetry slams, that you learn a lot, you learn a lot about what works best when writing and incorporating the music, that you have an idea from that work of what can be successful and what can sound really cool.
I hope so. But I think the most obvious difference writing for slam as against writing for music is structure. Slam pieces have a natural rhythm, but they don't have to be as relentlessly metric as those with music. That, of course, makes sense, because now I'm sharing the space with other people, all of whom think in beats, bars, and bridges. I've grown to quit sulking and just appreciate that reality.
You've quit sulking.
Yeah. After all, if you agree to share space, then there needs to be rules that all roommates must observe to avoid chaos. Also, when writing for slam, I never gave much thought to a hook or a refrain. They do appear time to time, but they're never scheduled. Those might be the biggest differences for me.
How much of your Jamaican background, of that background, comes into what you do and influences what you write and perform, or do you consider yourself open to so much and to either give that influence to something that is, I mean, you mentioned the Edward Lear poem, but the sense of does it come from that background, or is that one of the tools in the toolbox?
I'd say it's one of the tools. And, you know, all is fair game. Things I see, things I hear, if you back that up with a kind of constant culture shock. So things I see in my new setting that are often quite benign, but when you pay attention to them, when you point to them, then they have the potential of being interesting. So things I hear, see, read, experience.
What is it in a live performance when you are there and when you're with, in this case, Searching for Banjo, the connection with the audience? As you say, the people are getting up, they're dancing. When do you know you have that? Is that immediate, or do you have to work for it for a little while?
Well, it's different with the band. Well, your question was about the band. So, it doesn't need to be immediate, but it comes quite quickly when people work out what they're listening to, and and how it hits them. So yeah, it's even if not immediate, it's not very delayed.
The work that you do, the work that you'll be bringing to Helsinki, Hudson, walk us through. Give us a sense of what people can expect from the show.
Well, they can expect to see great music and a dub poet who dares to step off his soapbox now and again. And I say that because dub poetry has a kind of history of being didactic. It was born in the 70s and born out of a tradition of the forerunners to dub poetry were probably toasters. They were, and then in the 70s, a lot more attention started to be paid to social justice. So attention to injustice everywhere, South Africa, Southwest Africa, Zimbabwe, here in the U.S., home in Jamaica, pretty much wherever there was oppression. And it was backed by reggae rhythms with the bass as the lead instrument primarily. And these soon became known as the dub poets. And there are exceptions to the soapbox thing. I mean, one thinks of Lincoln Kwesi Johnson, Linton Kwesi Johnson, and perhaps Gene Breeze, you know, who steps off every now and again, standing in the rain again, Lorraine. But mostly we tend to be pretty political. It's kind of what almost defines the genre. But so yeah, on Sunday night there will be a dub poet who kind of steps away from the didacticism every now and again.
Everton Sylvester will be performing tracks from his just-released album Trial Separation as well as some Brooklyn Funk Essentials classics when he performs on Sunday night at 7 p.m. at Helsinki Hudson. He will be working with Searching for Banjo. Sunday night at 7, you can find out more by going to helsinkihudson.com. Everton, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Travel safe, and we look forward to having you in the region.
Great pleasure for me as well.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.